Well, I started out down a dirty road. Started out all alone. And the sun went down as I crossed the hill. And the town lit up, the world got still. I'm learning to fly, but I ain't got wings. Coming down is the hardest thing. Well, the good old days may not return, and the rocks might melt, and the seed may burn. I'm learning to fly, but I ain't got...
Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable for this Friday, the 2nd of October. Very nice to have you all with us. It's the end of the week, and it's been a hell of a week, and it ends a hell of a week. We have a huge story, obviously, to discuss this morning. And that is that the president has tested positive for coronavirus. We'll get to much more and talk about this in depth with our panel this morning. We, of course, welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Let me get to everybody and we'll dig right in here and start. We begin with Dr. Alan Chartok, who is with us. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Well, I'm just fine. Can you hear me?
Can
you
hear me? Yes.
I say.
You're beaming in, sir. It's good to have you as always.
Excellent. I just tripped over the microphone cord, so I was not sure whether or not it had come loose.
Well, I had you in the studio yesterday for the day, and I missed you. It was nice having you here, but I'm glad you're with me, at least in my ears.
Indeed.
We also welcome Judith Eng, former EPA regional administrator, visiting professor at Bennington College, president of Beyond Plastics. Judith, good morning.
Good morning. It's good to be with you all.
Wonderful to have you with us as well. Aaron Pasitti is here, professor of economics at Siena College. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
And we are always happy to have you here, especially when the jobs report is out. We get all giddy when that happens. And it obviously plays into what we're talking about today because of the effect on Wall Street and just the overall numbers themselves and what this means. So there's a lot to unpack today. We also welcome SUNY New Paltz Communications professor and former New York State Senator Terry Gibson. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, doing well. Thank you very much. Good to have you on aboard, as always. We also have a special guest this morning who's joining us for the first part of the program, and that is Dr. Jim Fagan. He is an immunologist. He is here in the Berkshires but practices in Long Island, and we welcome him to the program this morning. Dr. Fagan, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for inviting me.
Very nice to have you here. So let us begin with you, Doctor, if we can, and that is we found out in the middle of the night that the president has tested positive for coronavirus. We're being told, the New York Times is reporting, that the president, who is 74 years old, is experiencing cold-like symptoms after testing positive. That's according to two people familiar with his condition. They say that his symptoms appear mild so far. What does that tell us about COVID? And ultimately, is that typical in the early stages, or what you would expect and what the concerns are here?
Yeah, well, I think the overarching concern is the president's age and physical condition. The fact that he's having mild to cold-like symptoms now is, you know, fairly typical, because that's how coronavirus, or COVID-19 specifically, which is a respiratory virus, begins. Usually infects through the nasopharynx, through the mucous membranes, and then it rapidly, becomes much more invasive. So the fact that he's having mild symptoms now certainly does not in any way predict what will happen in the future. Hopefully that will be the extent of his symptoms. But the concern is his age and certainly his medical condition. Anyone with morbid obesity is at risk for complications of COVID-19. Other risks would be things like heart disease, someone who's in heart failure, severe coronary artery disease. If someone is in treatment for a malignancy, that's a risk. Their respiratory conditions, such as chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, their auto-inflammatory conditions like type 2 diabetes, chronic kidney disease, certain blood disorders, sickle cell disease. These are things that are high risk for morbidity from, the COVID-19 virus. But we'll have to wait and see what happens. There's absolutely no way to predict in advance the response that an individual will have.
This is reporting from Maggie Haberman of the New York Times. It said the president has had what one person described as cold-like symptoms at a fundraiser he attended at his golf club at Bedminster yesterday, where one attendee said the president came in contact with about 100 people and seemed lethargic. A person briefed on the matter said that Mr. Trump fell asleep at one point in Air Force One on the way back from a rally in Minnesota on Wednesday night. A White House official said that as of Thursday night, the president's treatment plan was still being discussed. So was a possible national address or a videotaped statement from the president to demonstrate that he was functioning and that the government is uninterrupted. Doctor, obviously you can't speak to the president's condition, but I would like to ask you about the one part that I just read about where he came in contact with about 100 people. Given that these events have mostly been maskless, how much danger is there for those who are in the same room, not necessarily close to the president, but still in the same room?
I think there's a very significant danger. I mean, one of the things that we've learned about COVID-19 is that it is extraordinarily contagious. Much more contagious than influenza. And so that's a real, real concern, which is the reason why we're told to, wear masks and to engage in social distancing and careful hygiene, hand hygiene, and the rest of it. It is extraordinarily contagious. And I think that what we're seeing, what we're hearing in the news today, is a perfect example of that. It's not just Hope Hicks who is positive, but the president, the first lady, and there will probably be a number of other individuals who are in close contact with the president and the administration who will test positive. And again, the real concern is that, some of these individuals will most likely become very, very sick. Others will have mild illness, but we don't know. There's no way to predict that. But again, being in close contact, not wearing a mask, is a major, major, major risk factor.
Now, Dr. Fagan, to your qualifications, you are an immunologist, and I know you work with and I know that you work with COVID patients. So when not without talking about the president specifically, I would ask you, when you hear, there are two things I want to know. One is that there was that secretive visit to the hospital that we all know about, but nobody was ever told what that was about. And number two, you've seen these kinds of symptoms, I take it, which start as, feeling cold-like thing, and then you've seen them develop, have you not?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that we know, again, it's the unpredictable nature that throws us off with this infection. I mean, some people have COVID-19 and they get a cold and, and their symptoms are not much worse than the common cold. And then other individuals, have mild symptoms, which all of a sudden develop into quite severe symptoms. I think that the real problem with COVID-19, the real problem is not the it's not what the virus is doing. It's what the immune response is doing. And you hear many, many stories of individuals who got COVID-19. They were sick for the first week. They had, you know, flu-like symptoms with runny nose and cough and congestion and a fever and malaise and fatigue and all the rest of it. And then they felt like they were getting better. On day 7, day 8, they felt like they were getting better. And then all of a sudden, on day 9 or day 10, they crashed. And they had respiratory distress, rushed to the emergency room. Many of those individuals put on ventilators, and many, unfortunately, did not make it. And what we think is going on there is the immune response to this infection, and which is the immune dysregulation that's associated with this. You get a massive, massive, massive immune response, and that, we think, is responsible for this sort of a crashing that occurs in some of these individuals. And there's no way to predict that. There's just it doesn't, you know, you can be perfectly healthy and have this, or you can be suffering with a pre-existing medical condition, an autoimmune disease. But we have absolutely no way of predicting what individual is going to have this this really aggressive immune response that can do them in. And that's the real problem. It's the unpredictable nature of this. Associated with the enormous infectivity of this virus, that is very scary.
Yeah, Jim, would he be getting? Would Trump be getting remediation that the rest of us couldn't expect? That would be so, so important that a president would get it and the common man would not.
No, I don't believe so, Alan. I'd be curious if he's taking hydroxychloroquine, but that's another issue. But there really, I mean, there's immune plasma. I would be very, very surprised if they were administering that to him at this point. Remdesivir, he does not need at this point because he's not having severe, respiratory symptoms. This is a viral infection, Alan, and we do not have therapeutics yet for this specific virus. And so I don't believe that he would be getting something that none of us, that is not available to any of us and any of the rest of us.
Oh, I have a question to Doctor, and that is, your field, of course, is pediatric immunology, and much has been made by the president as well as the administration as far as children getting this disease, and saying that it is very unlikely to harm them in any great way, and I believe the president has said that it just is basically a case of the sniffles. Since we have you here, and can you talk a little bit about that and what we know and what we think we know about how this disease impacts children?
Yeah, sure. So I think one of the main differences between adults and kids is that children are immunologic virgins to a large extent. You know, there's this concept that in order to stay healthy, you really have to get sick. And that's the way the immune system works. There are two basic types of classes of the immune system. There's the adaptive immune system, which involves lymphocytes like T cells and B cells. That these are the cells that generate the antibody responses that everybody talks about. And then there's innate immunity, which is your real basic immune responses. Innate immunity involves physical, chemical, and cellular defenses against pathogens such as bacteria and viruses. And what the purpose of the innate immunity is to prevent the spread and movement of foreign pathogens like viruses and bacteria throughout the body. And perfect examples of that would be things like the skin and the gastrointestinal tract, the respiratory tract, the nasopharyngeal tract, the urogenital tract. These tracts are lined with a mucous membrane. It's all part of the innate immune response. And so the purpose of mucus, everybody thinks mucus is annoying. Actually, it's it's life-saving because it traps these pathogens, and then the body is able to move them out of the body. So mucus secretion, and you see this in the gastrointestinal tract as well, gastric acid, bile, even things like saliva, tears, sweat. These are all very important functions that are part of the innate immune system, which help prevent the movement and spread of these pathogens. And then the innate system also initiates specific adaptive immune responses, which that's what leads to, you know, the antibodies, secretions, and synthesis. You know, I always say that, you know, everybody talks about antibodies. Antibodies are the tip of the iceberg. You know, what's going on underneath that is an amazingly complex system of lymphocytes and cells and secretions that are vital to our health. Now, so in terms of getting back to your question, in terms of kids, why do kids seem to be somewhat immune to this? They're not immune to it because they've seen it before. This is a novel virus, so we know that. I think that kids do better with COVID-19 because I think that their innate immune responses are much more robust because, remember, kids, as I said before, are immunologic virgins. So their bodies are used to seeing foreign pathogens, bacteria and viruses that they've never seen before, that they're beginning to mount an immune response to. And that's why it's so important that the innate immune system of a child who is a relative immunologic virgin be, you know, on guard all the time. And so I think that is one of the possible explanations for why children do better than adults, because their innate immune responses are much more robust, and they actually serve to prevent COVID-19 from ever becoming an infectious disease. So the other question is, can they shed the virus? Mm. And we don't really have a firm answer to that.
We just have about 30 seconds, Doctor, but go ahead.
Yeah, so we don't have a firm answer to whether or not they can actually, you know, shed the virus. And that's a real concern. But the other part is that we certainly know that there are many stories, many, many kids now who get terribly sick and who have died of COVID-19. I think it's dangerous to state that you don't have to worry about children and this infection, because we certainly do. It's a real concern.
Dr. Jim Fagan is with us. We're going to hold him for a few minutes. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we will continue our discussion. Of course, the breaking news is that President Donald Trump has tested positive for coronavirus. We will also bring our panel in to discuss this fully, and we'll do all of that and include your questions right after this short break. Listening to Tom Petty this morning, who passed away 3 years ago today. So we remember him this morning and the music that we're playing. We are talking, of course, about the breaking news of the day that President Trump and his wife, First Lady Melania Trump, have tested positive for the coronavirus and COVID-19. We are getting news in. We just heard during the news break from BBC a couple of tidbits, one being that Joe Biden is offering thoughts and prayers for the president, and we're still waiting word as to the testing of Joe Biden, who was on the stage with the president on Tuesday night. So that is still a question. Did not the statement that he made did not address that major question raised by the fact that Biden stood on the same stage as the president. Also, we heard from just a moment ago in that newscast that President Trump has tested negative for the coronavirus. So this story obviously is going to be playing out as we just heard another doctor from Boston say a moment ago on the BBC, that this is something that the next 10 to 14 days are critical. Our panel this morning, Dr. Alan Chartok, Judith Enck, Aaron Pasitti, and Terry Gibson. Also, Dr. Jim Fagan joins us this morning. He is an immunologist and is with us to help make sense of the medical side of this story. Let me see. Judith, I know you had a question for the doctor.
I do. Thank you. Good morning, doctor. So also, Joe, just moments ago, the New York Times reported that Rona McDaniel, the chair of the Republican Party, has tested positive. And she was with the president as recently as Friday. So, you know, there's probably a number of people in the inner circle who were exposed to Hope Hicks. So, doctor, my question is, and I think it's one on a lot of people's mind, of course, we're concerned about the health of the president and the first lady, but the president was on the stage with Joe Biden Tuesday evening, and he was yelling a lot. So
yeah,
probably
was.
a lot of droplets in the air. Mm-hmm. And apparently the Trump family was asked to wear masks and did not. So what kind of risk does Joe Biden face just from proximity and aerosol exposure?
Well, I mean, clearly they were more than 6 feet apart, and that's certainly a mm-hmm. good sign. But you are absolutely correct. We now we know for a fact that this virus is transmitted as aerosol droplets, which means it can sort of float through the air for a period of time. We know that Donald Trump was speaking very loudly, and that's a risk. And if he's carrying the virus in his nasopharynx and in his secretions, that is how the virus becomes aerosolized. It does, flow through the air and stays in the air for, a period of time. And so I would say that that is certainly a moderate to high risk for anyone on the stage, certainly including the vice president. Now, the fact that he tested negative? Is that what I heard?
Who?
Vice President Biden.
No, Vice President Pence. Vice President Pence tested negative, but Biden has not announced.
Pending.
Yes, I don't know if he has been tested yet, or has been tested, and we're waiting for the results. I don't know.
Well, clearly, there's no question that everyone who is in proximity to the president during the debate needs to be tested. And but Judith, to answer your question, I think that certainly is a significant risk factor for Vice President Biden, and hopefully he will test negative. But that's a real concern.
Alan,
well, following up on Judith's excellent question, of course, is a question I have for you personally. pardon me. No, I don't have it. I just ate a Cheerio the wrong way.
You're wearing a mask.
Okay, yeah. But the question
Cheerios.
Is, what do you do, Dr. Fagan, when, and I know you work with COVID patients, what do you do when you get home?
Well, it's a routine. So, I mean, the problem with this infection is that it isn't working with people who you know have COVID. It's working with people you don't know have COVID.
Right.
And so you have to assume that anyone you come in contact with, is a potential carrier and transmitter of this infection. That is exactly why we do what we do. So, when I go to work, I wear scrubs. I put on an N95 mask. I obviously put on a gown. I put on gloves. I put on a face shield. And this is my day, and then when I get home at night, I pull into the garage and I take all my clothes and put them in the washing machine and go upstairs and take a shower. And that's my routine. It's constant hand washing, constant hand sanitation. You know, when I pull off a pair of gloves, I sanitize my hands and put on a new pair of gloves. And you just have to get into, it's a new life, and you have to get into this routine that, you know, you can't let up. And that's why it's so disconcerting for me and other health professionals to see, you know, people sort of not following the rules. You know, there is absolutely no question that, you know, a face mask is essential to preventing this disease. It's much more important than even getting vaccinated. This doesn't prevent 100%, you know, certainty, but it certainly decreases significantly the likelihood that you're going to get a large bolus of virus into your mucous membranes. And so, that's what we do, Alan, to answer your question.
So it was just one follow-up, Joe. I know I'm hogging the time.
Not
but
at all.
Jim, hear the now this is not a political question. It's a medical question. Okay. If you hear the president of the United States saying you don't need to wear a mask, and I'm not going to wear a mask myself, from a medical perspective, obviously there are political implications too, but from a medical perspective, this is pretty irresponsible, isn't it?
It's egregious. It's egregious. He would not, Donald Trump would not be allowed into my building, let alone into my office, without wearing a mask. You know, everyone who goes to a medical facility, and this is probably standard throughout the country now, has a mask on or they don't come in. They get their temperature taken or they don't go upstairs. You know, it's these are the procedures that we all have to engage in now, and for good reason. And for the for anyone, President of the United States or anyone else, to be claiming that you don't have to wear a mask is just enormously irresponsible.
So to piggyback on Alan's question, given that what we know in the reporting from the New York Times, and I was just reading an article in the Boston Globe about this as well, the culture of the White House and of that inner sanctum of the White House, of the closest advisors, is that you don't wear a mask. And the president is annoyed by them and doesn't want people wearing them around him.
Right.
It's hard. I don't want to, to Alan's point, I'm asking this as a medical and a scientific question, but what does that mean for all of those around? I mean, if the highest reaches of government are exposed to that, this is really very similar to Judith's question of what does that mean? And this could be quite serious.
But Joe, the answer is look what happened. Look at the news.
Yeah.
Look what happened. It isn't just Hope Hicks is positive. Look who else is positive. That's exactly what we expect when you don't, engage in safe practices. If you don't wear a mask, you don't social distance, you don't wash your hands. What surprises me, Joe, is that I'm shocked that this hasn't happened. That this didn't happen 2 or 3 months ago.
Yes.
You know, this was absolutely, you could have predicted this would happen.
Do any of the other panel members have a question for Dr. Fagan before we let him go help other people?
I guess I would just ask about his confidence in the contract tracing system. These 100 people that he was around, I guess it was yesterday at the fundraiser. Is there a reliable system in place to track all of these people?
Well, the problem is that the contact tracing is great if you do it immediately. As soon as somebody tests positive, you immediately trace their contacts. If you wait a couple of days, honestly, it's too late. I mean, that virus has already spread because those individuals have already been with other individuals, and it's logarithmic, the exposure. And so when you're with that many people, contact tracing is really important if you do it correctly and you do it in a timely fashion. But the more people who are in close contact with an individual who has tested positive for COVID, it makes obviously the contact tracing much more difficult and much more complex. And the timing is critical in this, because if you wait 2 or 3 days or 4 days, you know, by that time, honestly, contact tracing is a waste of time because that bug is already out there. you know, you can't, you, right. you, it becomes impossible to do that. So,
so you got 200.
Ironically,
sure. Go ahead, Judith. Go ahead.
Ironically, what might make the contact tracing easier is when you attend Trump events, you have to sign a liability waiver that you won't hold the campaign liable if you get ill. And they had 100 people indoors with no masks yesterday. And they now know how to find them because probably most of them signed that paperwork. And my understanding is that a number of the key aides did not travel to this fundraiser with the president because they were in close proximity to Hope Hicks. But yet, you know, there are so many astonishing parts to the story. But the president knowing that he was exposed to someone who tested positive still decided to go to this fundraiser in New Jersey and did not have people wearing masks. I mean, I think that speaks volumes.
Oh, my God. It certainly does.
Yeah. Alan,
now,
you were going to say.
I was going to say we have over 200,000 deaths in the United States now. South Korea, which we know by comparison and did it the right way, has many, many multiples of less. Put another way. So my question to you is,
Alan, I'm just going to quickly interrupt to say that the received word from the White House is saying that Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner have tested negative for coronavirus. So go on with your question. I'm sorry.
I'm not going to say anything about that.
I know.
But
I know you're not.
But my question is, of course, is one of responsibility. You know, this is not perhaps a medical question, but, you know, 200,000 people are dead in the United States. And I happen to think over 200,000 people, I happen to think that had Donald Trump said wear a mask to everybody in this country, you wouldn't have anything like 200,000. As a medical man, do you accept that logic?
Well, Alan, look what happened in Europe. Europe has 400 million people. You know, they didn't have 200,000 deaths. There's absolutely no question about what is the right thing to do, what is the right approach. And we have just abundant data now confirming that if you wear a mask, you will prevent the spread of this infection. It's not a debate. We see what happened in many other countries, you know, where the word came down from the top. This is what we have to do. This is how we have to behave. And look at the results. There is absolutely no question that Americans behaved in a different way and did not, you know, do what we needed to do. And as a result, you know, overwhelming tragedy. We lost over 200,000 Americans, and I'm very concerned about, you know, what's next.
We're just about out of time with you, Doctor, and I let me ask, this is the final question, and I certainly don't mean to put you on the spot to be a spokesman for the entire medical community, but in general, in speaking to your colleagues and people who have day-to-day contact with treating those who have the coronavirus and COVID-19, are you all pissed off?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very.
Because it's preventable, right? I mean,
it's preventable. Absolutely. Absolutely. Hmm. Very upset about what has happened in the United States of America and the COVID-19 virus. It is just unimaginable to me and to most of my colleagues how we could have gotten to this state.
Dr. Jim Fagan,
we put a kid in jail, I've said it 1,000 times, with a gun for holding up a store. And here is a president who is largely responsible for the death of 200,000 people, or of a large portion of them, because he didn't do the obvious leadership things he should have been doing. Unbelievable.
Dr. Jim Fagan.
And just to add to that.
Yep.
Oh.
No, go ahead.
I think what Alan was saying was that, and now he is likely responsible for having personally exposed hundreds of people to the virus who may have dire consequences because of that.
That's correct.
Well, thousands. He was at the debate on Tuesday. He did a Minnesota rally on Wednesday
right.
with thousands of people there.
Mm-hmm. Now, CNN is reporting that Pence and his wife are not positive.
Right.
Nevertheless, because Trump is such a lying liar, and because the news has already come out, I think Maggie Haberman, but I'm not sure whether it was she, but I saw it on CNN this morning, that they were considering not telling. You know, not telling that they had it.
Well, they didn't. Alan, Bloomberg reporter reported this. The White House was not telling anyone.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right, Judith.
Yeah, it was the news about Hope Hicks that started this ball rolling. We have to take a break. Dr. Fagan, my deep appreciation and thanks to you for joining us this morning. You can join us anytime. You're a wonderful radio guest and very important. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Stay well, everyone.
Be well. Thank you. Dr. Jim Fagan, our guest this morning, an immunologist who joined us to talk about the breaking news of President Trump testing positive for COVID-19. The rest of our panel will remain. Alan Chartok, Judith Henke, Aaron Pasitti, and Terry Gibson. We'll get into it and talk about all the other stuff when we come right back.
Up and battered around, been sent up and I've been shut down. You're the best thing that I've ever found. Handle me with care. Reputation's changeable, situation's terrible.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable for this Friday morning. It's the 2nd of October, 52 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock. And we welcome our full panel this morning. And we had a special guest for the first part. And now we are left with our wonderful panel, our core panel, Alan Chartok, Judith Henke, Aaron Pasitti, and Terry Gibson. And of course, your questions. Panel at WAMC.org. I think this goes without saying. I just want listeners to know that we're gonna talk about a lot of the aspects of this, and we collectively hope and send best wishes. We do not want anyone to be ill. We do not want anyone to be hurt. We do not want anyone to fall ill. So our best wishes are sent out to both the president, the first lady, Hope Hicks, and all of those who have come reported. With that said, there are still a billion questions to be asked and many sides to this, so we are going to talk about them. We're going to ask them. But at the baseline of that, please know that we're not wishing anyone ill. We are simply talking about issues and quite frankly, irony and hypocrisy that has come out as a result of this. But that doesn't mean that we are not... with many other people wishing the best. So with that, and I say that more to our listeners because I'm reading some of the letters and, well, we won't be reading them, but they're pretty awful. So
in what way are they awful in terms of?
Well, you know, wishing ill, you know, like this is a, yeah, you know, we, hoping we don't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'd like to just say something here.
Yes,
there are two things to be considered. We can all say, quite correctly, we don't wish anybody to die or to have disease or anything like that. That's true. But this president is largely responsible for a good deal of what's happened in this country because of the coronavirus.
And that's the hypocrisy part, right?
And we can hold him damn well responsible for that. You know, it doesn't mean that we should say that just because we don't wish him ill personally, that he doesn't have to take the consequences and, frankly, the political consequences for what he's done. It's incredible.
So let me begin with you, Alan, on this. What do you believe the political consequences will be? We're in the very early stages of this. As we just spoke with the doctor, we don't know how this is going to go over the next 10 to 14 days. So with that in mind, what could the political consequences be?
Here's a guy who does not wear a mask, who told Americans not to wear masks, who said anybody in the White House who wore a mask was going to incur his disfavor, according to all of these reports. And as a result, people are going to get sick. People are going to die. Now, who is going to say, oh, because he has the virus, I'm switching from being a, you know, a Biden voter to being a Trump voter out of sympathy for the president? I don't believe it's going to happen. That's all I'm going to say for now.
Okay. Judith?
Well, he has no credibility speaking. And I think throughout he did not have credibility, but a lot of his political followers listened to him. Who could have predicted, wearing a mask being a partisan issue? It was, you heard the frustration in Dr. Fagan's voice, and it's what climate scientists feel like every day, telling the truth and having it ignored. The bottom line is, as Alan has stated, the United States has the world's population. 25% deaths are in the United States from COVID. And the president bears direct responsibility for this. We knew right out of the gate that first, his administration is so incompetent, they would not be able to handle an effective response, and they were going to hand it over to the states immediately. And then second, it was beyond incompetence. He made mask wearing and social distancing. So I think no one should listen to him again on the COVID issue. I certainly hope he recovers, but he's 74 years old. He has the risk factors. And I'm reminded of during the AIDS crisis that continues, of course, Reagan was dismissing the tragedy of AIDS until Rock Hudson succumbed to it. So does this, him personally getting the virus and the first, this, change his public messaging on that?
Judith, you're coming in and out. I don't know if you can restart your machine there, and hopefully we'll get you back to better. You were
okay.
You're better off before, but we're going to take a break in just a minute. Let's see. Aaron, we have not heard your voice yet this morning, except to say hello. So hello, and what have you got?
Hello. So I know I'm going to get pilloried for this. So this is a good lead into the break. this is unambiguously good for Republicans and Trump. If Trump survives this, he will thump his chest and come out as the strong leader, and that this was a liberal ploy to get rid of him, and you can survive without a mask. If he were to pass away, then we have absolute campaign chaos and extreme litigation in the courts regarding the validity of the election, and Republicans will probably largely be successful in all of that litigation. So This is just really bad news for the country, in addition to the first family, but really good news for Republicans and their chances of winning in November.
Alan Chartok, Judith Henk, Aaron Pasitti, and Terry Gibson with us this morning, all making up our panel. We welcome your letters. We will get to those. Here's a shock. We have a lot of them. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. We'll get to those and talk much more about all of the breaking news when we return after this news break with Ray Graff.
So good, like anything was possible. Hit cruise control and rub my eyes. The last 3 days, the rain was unstoppable. It was always cold, no sunshine.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judith Ank, Aaron Pasitti, and Terry Gibson. During the break, I asked all of our panelists if it was okay if we could extend a little bit because we took up some time with the doctor, and I'd love to have more time with the panelists and also with your letters. All have agreed, so we are good until 11 o'clock this morning. So I thank all of you for doing that, and so you can stay tuned and we'll have an extended conversation this morning. With that said, we do welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. And of course, we'll be bringing you the breaking news as it comes in and as we become aware of it. And we'll have a full wrap up on everything beginning at noon today on Midday Magazine. Here's what we know right now. The President of the United States, as well as the First Lady, have tested positive for COVID-19, the coronavirus. Also, reporting, the New York Times is reporting that the president is said to show mild symptoms after the positive virus test. That is also included in a statement from the White House. Meanwhile, Vice President Mike Pence and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo are both in the clear for the coronavirus, according to testing, and the White House has reported on those tests. We are awaiting word from Senator Joe Biden on his testing as to when and where that testing has occurred or will occur, and also, obviously, the results of that testing. Many other aspects to this story that we'll get to as we go through it. So, Terry, I think we were up to you, and so talk a little bit about your overall reaction to this.
Well, on the political side of it, I just think that this is yet again a very clear message of the differences in character between these two presidential candidates. I don't know what else you need to prove that the president is a person who time and time again shows that he simply does not care about anyone except himself. And his actions here and actually being a spreader of the virus himself prove that once again. And I don't know what else you can show people to prove that. Whereas you have a Democratic candidate who time and time again is seen visibly taking all the various courses of action, like wearing a mask, which he's made fun of by the president. I thought the symbolic nature of the debate where the Trump family immediately took off their mask, Joe Biden kept her mask on, even had it on when she went up on the stage. I thought that was very telling about the character of these two candidates. On another issue, I must say that Aaron's comments before we left for the break quite stunned me, and I'm hoping to hear more details about how he arrived at that conclusion.
I'm with you.
Okay, Aaron, you're up.
Sure. So if Trump survives this, I mean, it's just he emerges much stronger from this politically if he makes it through. I don't think that's in doubt at all. Everybody, you know, incumbents will rally around him. Voters will rally around him. And this is even assuming that there's no sympathy vote, which I would like to think is relatively small. So I don't see a downside to this for him if he makes it out. If he doesn't make it out, then the Republican Party as a whole will benefit because I have said all along that Pence is far more dangerous than Trump. Trump is good at spinning crises to his advantage and keeping himself in the news, but he's not very good at making policy. And Mike Pence is far more strategic because he's actually a politician. And I think would likely and I think he's far more conservative and would go much further using the appropriate tools of government to shift the country even further to the right, from everything from economics to the environment to social issues. So, and, you know, and then people say, well, what if Pence, you know, tests positive in a couple days and then we have a Pelosi presidency? The Republicans would litigate that to the point where the country would be so disoriented and confused and have no idea what's going on that chaos would certainly play to the whole Republican law and order party line. So I really don't see a downside to Republicans for this. I think people should be very cautious in how they interpret this.
So politically, obviously, we can talk about this. I do think that we can't. Obviously, we can't go too far and think that there's any reason to believe that the president won't be well and get better over time. Obviously, we can extrapolate this and talk about all kinds of scenarios. But, you know, as of now, we hope he will get better and that we will have whatever we have as a debate of what the impact of this will be on voters, and obviously his campaign schedule and all of that seems to be a fair point. Judith, I heard hesitation in your voice, so go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I did think that if, you know, Trump feels better in a week, he comes out and he thumps his chest and say, look, it was just like a flu, all this overreaction. But I think COVID is so deep in people's psyches that this has really damaged Trump's credibility even further. You look at the Albany Times-Union this morning, report after report of schools closing, going to remote because of cases in schools. So we have to remember, this is not happening in a vacuum. This is happening when parents are pulling out their hair over concern about their kids' safety in schools, and then school schedules changing all the time. And Trump and Melania will get the best health care imaginable. And just think about it. You know, they were fairly isolated. They were getting tested every day. They still got it. And, you know, they're not nurses. They're not teachers. They're not UPS delivery people or grocery clerks who are exposed regularly, and they still got it. So I think I just keep coming back to the images in New York City in March and April, where you had people standing outside on these long wait lines in the rain because they had to get tested for COVID. They had symptoms. You know, the number of people who died who did not have access to reliable health care or who didn't want to enter hospitals, or the people who died saying goodbye to their family on FaceTime. It's still deep, deep, deep in our souls what this country is still going through. And I think this is, you know, this is going to hit voters in a way that that we don't really know. But I think the voters that follow Trump and, you know, or don't wear a mask and they're very macho about the whole thing, they need to think twice here. One final thing I'll say is I think the next 24 hours in the White House is very important. They have to come clean. It is significant that the White House did not announce Hope Hicks diagnosis, but it was announced by a Bloomberg reporter. Are they going to have Dr. Atlas, you know, the discredited radiologist, be the public face of this? If they were smart, they would apologize to Dr. Fauci, get him in front of a camera, and have him disclose all the known facts. I think they've got about 24 hours to regain their footing. And Dr. Atlas and Katie McEnany ain't going to cut it. I think people need trusted messengers who are going to tell the truth.
Alan?
You know, I was just talking communicating with Laura Walker, your new president at Bennington College, and she is so
proud. I love Laura Walker.
And that's what I was about to tell you. She loves you. And there is such a mutual respect obvious there. And I just wanted to pass that on to you. But in the meantime, I don't agree with Aaron. I know where he's coming from. I think he's coming from fear. But I can tell you now, I'm infuriated by this president, and I think a lot of other people are. There are 200,000, over 200,000 dead people in the United States because of this guy, and it, because of the height of irresponsibility. And when you compare us with other countries, with Europe and anything else, he could have done more. He didn't do anything. And in my mind, this is my mind, he's a murderer. So so that while one can hope he gets better and he feels better and his wife feels better and all the rest, I just think the American people are very sensible about this. They know who's to blame here, and it's this president.
We have a lot of Aaron, would you like to say something before I want to move on to all our letters? But
yeah, I mean, I see Judith and Alan's points. I, you know, there's very little in there that I can disagree with. But Trump has always exceeded our expectations in how he can spin failures to his advantage. And this is just the latest.
As I said, you're coming from fear. I think the game is up for this guy. I do.
Well, and to Judith's point, everything's up in the air right now for the, I mean, not only the next 24 hours, but to know about the next debate. What's going to happen?
Oh, there can't be another debate unless they have, give them each a half an hour on the radio or an hour on the television, you know, something like that. But
so,
I don't see it. I don't see them standing up on a stage anymore.
Right. The vice presidential debate becomes even more important on, I think that's Tuesday night.
They're Wednesday night, I believe. Wednesday night. I think the 7th, I believe, Wednesday the 7th, Wednesday night. Yeah. So let me just I'll find the actual. There are many letters that we're getting, and I just want to.
Some you can't read.
Well, no, they're fine. But I just want to. I was just going to get to them. We have several of the same tone. And I wanted to just kind of talk about it. Which is a lot of people don't believe the diagnosis, and they're saying
they're saying it's an October surprise, a trick. It's a trick,
right? That the president, Becky says, please don't fall for this October surprise. This is just all part of Trump's evil plan to derail the election and throw up smoke screens. He does not have COVID. Mark my words. Very disheartening that we cannot believe anything that comes out of the White House these days. Love your show and listen every day. So two points there that I want to try to extract from one another. One is what Alan has said over and over again. Look, this president tells a lot of lies, so it's hard to believe the little boy who cried wolf. However, we are being told by reporters and investigative reporters that the president has tested positive for coronavirus. It is sad that we have to question that, and yet we are questioning that. But I assume it is a legal not legal. It is a certainly a fair issue to discuss as to if the news is true and accurate, and I bring it up because we got at least five letters saying the same thing.
Well Joe, it's the first thing that crossed my mind.
It was?
Go ahead. The first thing that crossed my mind was, is this true? I mean, I really question it because, you know, there is no credibility from this White House on being truthful about anything. But for the life of me, I can't really at this moment put together a scenario where it would be in his favor to lie about this. It seems to me to be a huge defeat for him.
But, I'm sort of with Dr. Fagan, who earlier said that, you know, he wasn't surprised it happened sooner. But go ahead, Judith.
Right. Well, you know, to take the Pacetti line here,
you have your own line, Aaron.
If Trump recovers quickly, and remember, Melania would have to recover quickly. If they recover quickly and it is just like cold-like symptoms, he's going to say it's proof that COVID is a really modest thing, and he'll start talking about a hoax again. But that is like a really big gamble. I mean, I truly do not believe that he's lying, that he has it. I mean, that would be the lies of all Trump lies. And we know he's a liar, 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 quote Alan Chertok. But I can't imagine that they would want this out and be able to exploit it, which is why we need to hear from Dr. Fauci and not the White House lawyer and not Trump's personal, I'm not lawyer, I'm doctor. And then remember Trump's personal doctor that he dictated the letter to, that he's in perfect health. You know, we really need credible medical voices here. And my only other point is the press is on this. You talk about the need for contact tracing. Reporters will be doing a lot of contact tracing in terms of who the president was in touch with.
We have a lot of letters. I want to get to as many as possible, and they're all over the place. So here we go. Steve writes, I'm not a Trump supporter, but Alan's strident insistence that Trump's personally responsible for 2,000 deaths is difficult to swallow. I understand and agree that he has not handled the crisis well, but calling the man a murderer is beyond the pale.
No, no, it's not. In fact, I think Alan understated it. Trump's responsible for 208,000 American deaths. And we know he did not cause the virus, but he's so downplayed and bungled the response, it would be inaccurate not to call him a murderer.
Alan?
And just look at the other countries. Look at Europe, which is a fraction of what we have, or South Korea. No, he is responsible because he did not do what he should have done. And we don't know what his political reasons are. And by the way, I can't figure out for the life of me why in the world this actually helps Trump. I don't think it does help Trump. If this is his October surprise, he better have something else in a plan B, because this isn't going to work for him. It's just going to put the cherry on top of the ice cream to say for all those who have been saying he's been irresponsible in the way he's handled it.
Elizabeth writes and says, Trump wins regardless. If he gets sick, he will get sympathy and respect. If he stays well, the narrative that COVID precautions are a socialist plot is strengthened and the maskless are emboldened. If he dies, no worries about jail next year for him. No worries about his gaffes for the RNC. In the meantime, the news is dominated by his every sniffle and we all feel anxious. Prediction, within a week, he's at rallies disregarding quarantine and it becomes much harder to get people to take precautions. That is from Elizabeth. We go to Irene, who says, is there any status on their son, Barron? Barron, according to CNN, has tested negative.
Negative.
Good.
But the question is not the parents, but the nanny.
Well, and there are reports of great concern within the White House resident staff, which, of course, you could understand. I think anyone in any workplace where people have tested positive are going to be concerned. Another point I mentioned, the one about whether it's fake news or not. The other consistent letter that we've been getting a lot of, this one from Steve, Pence et al. Are negative now. They could be positive anytime the next 10 days or so. Mm-hmm. So that is a point that we should make, I think, is a true point. Anne says, for now, I do believe this is fake news. Trump wants attention off his juvenile, pathetic debate performance and doesn't want to debate again. I wish he could get his education records. Calling him stupid really hits a nerve in him. We go to Kevin. Could not disagree more that Republicans have no downside. This event will only confirm the total hubris of Trump and his inner staff. The death toll is rising, employment is stagnating, and the people are frightened and confused. This helps the current occupant of the White House. I don't think so. We go to, that is a letter that I've read three times and I still don't understand it, so I'm not going to read it. Robert says, please discuss how this affects the Supreme Court vacancy. Well, that's an interesting question, too, because as we know, as of yesterday, I believe, Amy Coney Barrett was in the White House and meeting. She has an office in the White House, a temporary office set up, which
She's been tested. She's been tested negative.
Okay.
Whatever it's worth.
Does she have to quarantine because she was around Mark Meadows a lot in the last few days and she was with Trump on Friday? So if you follow coronavirus task force recommendations, she should quarantine for the next 14 days. Hopefully she doesn't get sick, but if she doesn't have symptoms, you know, she'll just Zoom with everyone. But she really should not be meeting with these elderly senators.
As I have said so many times, should schmud. Look, what these people want to do is they want to get her through. And frankly, mm-hmm. most of them, if I refer you, Judith, to the debates when they were all running against each other for what they thought of him. They think he's mm-hmm. a cheap huckster. Mm-hmm. So they don't mind if he goes. They just want that vote 6-3 on the Supreme Court.
All right. We go to, let's see. As I said, a lot of these are similar, so I'm just trying to go through them. Laura says people with infectious diseases have been charged with crimes for knowingly infecting others, HIV, hepatitis, etc. Trump should be charged with a crime for knowingly attending events unmasked, certainly after Hope Hicks tested positive. Ruth says, I assume the president was tested on Tuesday before the debate. Can results change that rapidly from negative to positive in a matter of days? Eric says, among all the brouhaha, the president and his wife testing positive, let's keep in mind about 1,000 other Americans were also diagnosed with the disease yesterday. Mm-hmm. The press does not publish their names. That is very true.
And Charlie says, don't get distracted.
Go ahead, Alan. Alan, I can't hear you.
Oh, yeah. Charlie says, don't get distracted. Wish them speedy recovery. Then keep paying attention to his non-payment of taxes and the Republican attempts to suppress the vote, please.
Wayne says, on hearing the news of positive tests, I had to wonder what advantages he saw in having his people put out this fake news. Quick change of narrative after the disastrous debate, a way to assure no more debates will take place by not having rallies, which are sucking up money on a group that will vote for him no matter what, by having sympathy messages come in from all his strongman idols, and at last coming away after a period of time showing the country that this COVID didn't faze him in the least. It's all blown up hype because of those Dems. Happy October surprise, says Wayne.
And I hope you don't mind my interjecting a bit of commentary here, Joe, but I have to say, I listened to CNN this morning. I think they did an excellent job. And then I listened to our network, NPR. It was really not good. They were so scared of their shadows that they refused to talk about all of the implications of this in the way that it should have been talked about. And I'm ashamed of them.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I also not for nothing. I was amused / horrified that every news outlet when, you know, in the middle of the night, all the alerts were going off. NPR's alert came out at 6:10 this morning that the president had tested positive. Anyway, cheap shot.
No, it's not a cheap shot. In fact, it's anything but cheap when we're paying them approaching $1 million now from WAMC. We could expect more than that.
Mike writes to us and says there is a scenario where Trump gets only mild symptoms and gets over this in 3 days. Then he gets right back out on the trail and tells all of his supporters how it's really no big deal and he doesn't understand what all the liberals are crying about. I'm headed back to my bunker, says Mike. Mary says, what happens if Joe Biden gets incapacitated from COVID-19 after exposure to Trump at the debate? And debate is in quotation marks. Would Kamala Harris become the presidential candidate? Alan, do you know any of that? I don't know how any of that works.
It would be up to the Democratic National Committee, obviously, to make that choice. Nevertheless, that's not
going to happen. A lot of carts in front of horses there.
That's not going to happen. And I am sure that it's interesting that all the people around Trump have been declared, you know, either infected or not, but we haven't heard anything from the Biden camp.
No, still waiting.
I can't believe they're not fast tracking that.
All right, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we're extending, so we'll have another half hour to discuss with our panel: Judith Henk, Aaron Bassetti, Terry Gibson, of course, Alan Chartok with us. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org.
School. He went to Hollywood, got a tattoo. He met a girl out there with a tattoo too. The future was wide open. They'd moved into a place they both could afford. He found a nightclub he could work at the door.
33 minutes after 10 o'clock on this Friday, the 2nd of October. It's our roundtable panel. We're extending to 11 o'clock this morning, and we have a wonderful panel with us. Alan Chartok, Judith Henk, Aaron Pasitti, and Terry Gibson. We just got a note from a press release from the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, who says, "My thoughts are with President Trump and the First Lady, and I wish them a full and speedy recovery. This virus is vicious and spreads easily. Wear a mask. Let's all look out for each other." We do have a lot of letters, and we'll continue with those. I do want to get to the jobs report and sort of the economic effect on this. Obviously, this is having an impact on the Dow, and it's having an effect on world markets throughout. And it is a story that comes at the time of this, at the exact same time as I believe the Dow is now down 185 points, if I'm reading that correctly with my glasses, which needs strengthening. However,
it may be half of what it started at.
Right.
In other words, there's an awful lot of investors who are saying, well, maybe not so bad. Yep.
Well, and so it is interesting. So, Aaron, let us go to you for a minute on that and the effect that all of this could potentially have.
Sure. Yeah, I've been holding off on this, and I wanted to let Judith know that I'm not thinking about this entirely in terms of a vacuum, because there are all of these other things going on. The market response thus far has been relatively muted. But the bigger story is that markets have been volatile since February, and this is only adding to that. The fact that the president has already said he's going to contest the election, the amount of litigation, all of this stuff, it causes extreme uncertainty in an already very fragile, uncertain market. So this morning, the jobs report did not help that. So the unemployment rate fell from 8.4 to 7.9%, and the economy added 661,000 jobs. That's about 75% of the jobs that were forecast to be added. The bigger story here is that the recovery from the pandemic has been consistently slowing for the last 3 months, and it's confirming a lot of economists' biggest fears, which is that, we got all of the low-hanging fruit, all of the workers that have been on temporary layoff. A lot of those jobs have come back. About 75% of the jobs added this month are in leisure and hospitality and retail. So this is really the low-hanging fruit that's driving the improvement in the jobs report. So the bigger story is, what about all of these workers who have permanently lost their job? What if, an 7 to 8% unemployment rate is going to be the norm for the next, 1 or 2 years? And that is turning into a very real possibility. The labor market recovery is slowing down. We're still down almost 13 million jobs since the start of the recession in February. Layoff claims are still elevated. Every Thursday morning, there's news that, we've laid off almost a million workers a week. We've got an economy where wages for the average middle and upper middle class family have largely stagnated. We have consumers that are strangled in debt, which makes the recovery from this recession even longer, because consumers are going to have to pay their debt obligations before, engaging in new consumption. And the biggest report that nobody heard of this week was the Congressional Budget Office's long-term economic forecast. And they predicted something that is really depressing and really frightening, and that is, trend growth in the United States for the next 3 decades will average around 1.6%. And that is the lowest it has been since the Great Depression. So the bigger fear here is not, we're out of the worst of the recession. It's that the recovery from the recession is going to be painfully slow, and painfully long. And even once we get out of the recession, that growth over the next three decades is going to be exceptionally muted. So you add uncertainty into a mix of three decades worth of, you know, slower than historically normal growth. And we essentially have an economy that is largely like a Tinder, Tinder with gasoline poured on it. And all it's going to take is, you know, another small match to be thrown on it before we're back to elevated unemployment. So this, you know, the unemployment report was not good news, despite the unemployment rate coming down. And you add that to everything else we've talked about. And it's not an economy in crisis, but it's a very sick, very crippled economy.
All right. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartow.
I have a quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
I got a question for Aaron. Aaron, I've been watching the stock market all morning, and I'm wondering, you know, it started out that it was really very terrifying for a lot of people. It was up close, I believe, to 400 points down. Now it's in the upper 100. What do you think the stock market is saying to us?
Yeah, it's saying it's confused and uncertain, I think, as all of us are. You know, watching the hour-to-hour movements can be kind of misleading. I think the bigger story here, like Jude said, is going to be like, how do things play out over the next 24 hours? And then once we get to tomorrow morning, how do things play out over the next 2 weeks? So I would be more curious, not so much the hour-to-hour movements in the Dow, but how it opens on Monday and then where it goes for the next 2 weeks and then ultimately up to November 3rd.
So a lot of wait and see, of course. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. Real quick, Elise Stefanik has released a statement saying that, I send my thoughts and best wishes to the President, First Lady, and the entire White House team for a speedy recovery. I have had no in-person contact with President Trump in the last 14 days. That from Elise Stefanik. Sue writes to us and says there should be no more debates, not even the VP debate. Pence may yet test positive, and I don't trust the Republicans to be honest about their testing. Already, Trump's recklessness may have compromised Biden's health with his shouting and his family's refusal to wear masks.
But they could do debates on Zoom. I mean, they did the whole Democratic and Republican conventions on Zoom.
Well,
let's not write off the debates. I think they're important, and there's, you know, you can get like the Zoom upgrade and do it effectively. Just don't have Chris Wallace moderating. The next moderator is from C-SPAN.
Yes, from C-SPAN.
I thought Wallace was a good actor.
I did too. I thought he did the best he possibly could.
I thought he was great.
I really do. I have to say, Judith, I thought his questions were excellent. I thought they were fair, and I thought he did the best job with what he could do.
Well, I loved his climate change question.
Well, I was going to say no one was expecting that. It was not I was going to bring that up next. There is no one expected that. It was not in his list, and yet for the first time in what I believe I read the last six
ever
presidential debates, meaning over the last six election cycles, that there was a question about the climate.
Yeah, well, I am grateful for that, but we don't have to relitigate it. But Chris Wallace has been interviewing Donald Trump on Fox for the last many years, and while none of us could have expected that brawl, I think Wallace could have really stepped in and made sure this was an actual debate and not just a bar fight. But let's let that slide.
Joe?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Joe?
Yeah, go ahead, Terry.
I just wanted to go back to the Elise Stefanik statement that you just read.
All right. I'm getting whiplash, but go ahead.
That statement, I think, deserves a little more analysis, because words do matter. This is a person who has enabled this president's action. This is a person who has stood by this president and shown her complete approval of his actions, which include obviously speaking out against mask wearing, not calling the country to action to actually take the aggressive measures that we need to stop this virus from spreading. And in that statement even, and in fact what we're seeing in a lot of Republican statements, is that while they're wishing the family well, which is certainly understandable and the right thing to do, they're not taking the public opportunity to say what the president hasn't said and what they could say now, which is wear a mask. This proves that we should all be wearing masks. They're not doing that. And I think that fact that they're leaving that important part out of their message is very telling.
I think also telling that Mark Meadows, the White House chief of staff, is giving a press briefing right now on the lawn of the White House and is not wearing a mask. But go ahead.
Wow. Well, didn't Stefanik travel to the indoor Tulsa rally with Trump, the one that was so poorly attended? And remember, Trump didn't pronounce her name right when there was speculation, might she replace Pence on the ballot? So Terry is absolutely right. She has been modeling terrible behavior, showing up at an indoor Trump rally that was so poorly attended. They, you know, put the kibosh on rallies for a short period of time. Like, her statement was just like, who cares? I mean, I'm glad she's not sick. I'm glad she's not with the president, but she missed an opportunity to course correct, not saying something very obvious like the need to wear a mask.
Alan?
Well, just remember that her, Judith, that her constituency is a very red Republican constituency. Pardon me. And if it proves anything, it's that, you know, she's a typical politician. She goes where the votes are. If you expect more than that out of her, you're probably barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah, I don't expect more. She is a Karl Rove protege, but people in the Adirondacks are pretty smart. And they can sniff out inconsistencies. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Let's go to Rob, who says, don't think of this situation from the point of view of a decided voter. Anyone in the middle, anyone struggling from being out of work, or anyone just missing living life that sees President Trump recover will possibly look at shutdowns and restrictions as negative and on purpose. Watch them vote Republican in an act of defiance. Then we go to Nancy, who says, the only thing I don't like about this October surprise is that it came so early in the month. Plenty of time for more. This is a good out for Trump, says Miriam. If/when he loses the election, he can blame his loss on his being ill and claim that, of course, this isn't his fault. Jim says, good morning, panel. The skeptical side of me wonders if this is a pathetic stunt for some sympathy and a way to avoid further debate losses.
Well, here's why I think it's not a stunt. It was a little weird last night. He tweeted that they were tested, kind of like waiting for the big reveal. But I'm looking at Trump's Twitter feed. He has not tweeted in 9 hours. That doesn't happen much.
Yes, I was just looking to the Mark Meadows is still speaking. He has said that they are in good spirits. Both the Trumps are in good spirits and would not take the question if the president was taking hydrochloroquine. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll do our last round with our panel. Alan Chartok, Judith Henke, Aaron Pasitti, and Terry Gibson. We'll be right back.
The hours you belong.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our final go-around, final 10 minutes with our panel, Alan Chartok, Judith Ink, Aaron Pasitti, and Terry Gibson. Alan, final thoughts this morning? What we're going to be watching over the weekend?
Well, I'm fascinated by the quality of the letters. There are, of course, all the people who just despise Trump. I find myself in the group, but not in agreement with them. You know, as saying, well, this is obviously a trick. It's going to work well for him. I don't see how this works well for him. I mean, this is a guy who denied the existence of the virus. He said it wasn't coming to the country. Then he's caught saying, well, he understands how serious it is. Now, you know, there will be people who attribute this to heaven, you know, to God, saying he's getting what he deserves. Nobody wants to say that. But I'm fascinated by the number of people who are writing on all different sides of this. Listen, the guy got the virus. He got it because he got exposed. He wouldn't wear a mask. And from that point of view, it was a terrible mistake on his part.
Judith.
Well, this is a moment when you need honesty and integrity in the White House, and we have neither. I mean, the president lies the way people breathe. It's just all day long, and it's not going to serve him well. I don't think, you know, I'm a little surprised by the letters suggesting that this is all made up. But that's the political culture that Donald Trump has created. Yep. My only hope here is that because he personally has COVID, that he may, in the even smallest way, not just moderate his messaging, but decide to get the federal government to be serious about fighting this health crisis. Every day over, you know, 1,000 cases. This is really quite, you know, we're still in the middle of this public health emergency. So it's my great prayer that this can have the result of getting all of the resources of the federal government pointed in the right direction, bring in Dr. Fauci, get rid of Atlas, you know, let the scientists at CDC finally do their job. I know that is overly optimistic, but that's actually what needs to happen to save lives.
Do you really think he's going to say, yeah, you're right, Judith. I was listening to her on the radio, and this is Donald Trump now, and I was wrong. And that, of course, would mean the first time he ever said he was wrong about anything.
He's never going to say he's wrong, but he could just step back and let the career professionals in the federal government do their jobs. He's not been letting them do that. You see how they tampered with the CDC recommendations on school reopening. Redfield is on the verge of resigning. All we need Trump to do is stay in bed, watch Fox all day, get some liquids, not bleach, but juice and water, and just let the federal government do their job. We just need him out of the way.
And how does that help him win? I mean, with him, it's all about winning. If he admits one way or the other that he was wrong or he shuts up, he loses. No question about it. Why in the world would he do that?
Because I think the more he speaks, the worse he's digging the hole and the worse the country is.
Yeah, but he doesn't know that. He doesn't
yeah,
know that.
He doesn't know that, but the 8% of voters in Ohio who have not made up their mind yet, they know. I just think he has no credibility on this, and this personal experience might inject just a tiny bit of reality.
Terry Gibson.
I think the country's been held hostage by this Trump reality show for just way too long, and the star of the show is now sick, and I think that the voters are going to take care of this come November 3rd. Mm-hmm. I think they've just had it. And there will always be that core group that sticks with him and has sympathy for him and finds a way to make excuses for him. But I just think this is the end of it. And I'm just deeply concerned about the future of our country right now because we do lack leadership. We do lack a clear message that will keep us safe. And I just hope that Joe Biden and his family are okay.
And Aaron Pasitti.
Yeah, Yeah, I think what Terry said was spot on, and unfortunately, all of the optimism in me got just corroded over the past 4 years. I would like what Judith said, that Trump steps back, turns this over to the experts. Like, I want all of this to be true. It's just been a cascade of increasingly unbelievable bungling of literally everything over the past 4 years. And yeah, much like everybody else, including the business and financial community, I think we're all just, craving some type of stability and predictability, because the past 4 years have been exhausting. So there is nothing I want more on November 3rd than a peaceful transfer of power. I'm just very cautiously optimistic at this point.
We just have a couple of letters I want to get to here. Richard says, it is such a missed opportunity that we as America had to show the world how to vanquish the coronavirus by having 95% of Americans wear masks, social distance, and show the world how it's done. Instead, we are the world's biggest losers. Michelle says, please, we do need to say that... let me see if there's a verb here. Yes. Michelle says, please, we need to see and hear Kamala Harris debate Vice President Pence. Well, if it's safe for everyone, we don't wish to put anyone in bad in a bad situation. Let's see. And in what time do I have to be out, Mike? Okay. We're wondering this morning, we're going to find out some more information. As I said, Mark Meadows just came out. We'll have a full update coming up with Midday Magazine at noon today, and take a look at this story as it unfolds and we look at it. But of course, the big question right now, it seems to me, Alan, is the is Joe Biden and that test and his health, and to find out what we know, and as soon as we know it, as to how he's doing.
Absolutely. And I'm concerned. I'm concerned that we haven't heard yet. I mean, certainly the Biden people could have acted as maybe not exactly as quickly as the president, who has all the resources, but certainly somebody could have done that test by now.
Yeah, and I don't, and obviously we don't want to, you don't want to jump to any conclusions or to read too much into it, or and it's, but it is, Judith, it's hard not to, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's, we just need honesty and integrity, and we don't have it.
God forbid he comes down with it. You know, the Trump people would say, you see, he did that to us.
Yeah. Well, and he's going to have to be. Well, yeah, that's I didn't even think of that. Terry,
there are news reports. There are news reports that the way the Bidens learned about this was just through the news, like us, that they weren't contacted by the Trump campaign. So they may just now be scrambling to get everybody tested to find out that maybe what's going on.
It doesn't have to be everybody. You know, it could be him. It could be Biden.
Yeah,
I'm worried. I'm concerned. But maybe I shouldn't be.
Well, thank goodness they didn't shake hands, because they did follow those guidelines.
Right.
They did not shake hands in the beginning or the end, which was probably a great relief to Biden. And now maybe that's what has saved him here.
All right. We're out of time. I want to thank everybody for going extra innings with us and for being with us. Alan, thank you so much. Have a beautiful
great
weekend.
Great job, Joe.
And
thank
to you, Judah, thank Aaron Pasitti, Terry Gibson. Thank you all very, very much. We'll be back with more show right after this.